I'm Tom Barbalay. Novolab can be thought of as a series of different simulations. There's a landscape simulation, which creates a large landscape environment. There's a biological simulation, which creates the biology over that landscape. There's a weather simulation that obviously simulates the weather over the landscape. And there are the Novolapes, the kind of simulated cognitive entities, the intelligent agents, if you will, that wander over the simulation environment. And they have three dominant kind of behavioural simulations. There's a cognitive simulation which represents the raw biology of kind of fear and desire and these kind of elements. There's a social simulation which enables them to wait and have various social interactions. And there's also what I call the narrative engine, which basically means that they can have a rich language which they both communicate with external Novolapes and also communicate with internally. In addition to this, in the past 6 months, there have been addition of a number of medical simulations, a metabolism simulation for the Novolapes, including the heart rate, breathing rate, these kind of things, and also a pathogen simulation, which covers airborne and genetic diseases. In addition to this, obviously, you need to be able to see the environment, you need to be able to interact with the environment. There's a graphical user interface and also a command line version, which the command line version actually gives you a considerably more intimate means of interrogating the various simulations.
Can I ask you a question?
Certainly.
Maybe you covered this in the beginning, I just missed it. What's the space that this is in? Is this for software, or this is just for...
It's software.
...modeling the way apes run?
It's always had a definitional problem. It's currently classified, I guess, as artificial life simulation in terms of intelligent agents in a simulated environment. So that's the space that it holds in. But it's actually been quite useful for companies to use as well.
So modeling how apes run in different types of environments?
Well, there's an interesting component associated with, does the landscape, i.e., for example, if it's a kind of rich tropical environment with plenty of food and these kind of things, what kind of societies evolve out of that versus, very dark, scarce food, heavily overpopulated? I mean, all these kind of questions are in there. So the idea is to kind of almost create a philosophical simulation as well. So I launched the project in 1996. It was originally launched under the name Nirvana. It had no license attached to it, just a copyright notice. In 1997, I got funding from the Australian Film Commission primarily to develop the graphics component of the simulation. And in 1999, the graphics component was written about by a media theorist called Doug Rushkoff. I'm not sure if any of you have heard of him. And the article was syndicated in about 25 publications worldwide and was slashdotted and basically caused me to move to this part of the world. After working here for about 18 months, I moved to the UK. And through this period, there was a kind of parallel narrative associated with the GPL and open source software, and I always considered Novolape, particularly in Australia, the notion of the GPL in terms of just writing a bigger license because you don't really like licenses, it didn't really sit well with me. But looking at the infrastructure that was being created for open source projects and the fact that Novolape, Nirvana as it was called then, always had source code available, I moved it onto the BSD, which was at the time the least obnoxious of the licenses, and moved the source code onto SourceForge. At this time, in fact, exactly at the time I was doing that, a startup was formed by some former Microsoft employees called Nirvana. It was headed by a fellow called Nosa Amagui, and they started initially by saying, "We want your domain name. What you've developed is, relatively abstract. You can change the domain names." And then they proceeded to file trademarks on the development associated with software and started filing copyrights. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with JMRI, Jacobson, that case. There was a fellow who developed a software package. And the difference between Jacobson and this experience was Jacobson was based in the US, and the fellow who was trying to get the domain name and various other things from him was also based in the US. The fact that I was based in the UK at the time made it more difficult for Amagui's lawyers, basically, to do filings, these kind of things. So that was about 2.5 years of basically me behaving in a way that I had learned through working with startups through the earlier period. In 2003, as I said, Novolape hasn't traditionally had a home in any kind of descriptive sense. So at the time, I was very heavily involved with the International Game Developers Association, and based on my experiences, I formed an intellectual property rights special interest group. I changed the name of the project. I mean, this went on and on and on, basically, while I was continuing to develop it, to Novolape, because the Novolapes were always the creatures that wandered around on the Nirvana Island, as it was then. So it just seemed a logical change. And eventually, following a lot of additional nonsense, Amagui actually bought the domain name from me. Now, here's a slightly different account that comes through the Fujinsan Business Journal. But basically, he said it kept him up late at night, and even though he was living hand-to-mouth with his $800,000, he was able to part with $66,000 for Nirvana. Thankfully, that was the last that I heard of him. But it really gave me a sense of, you know, what open source was fundamentally and the kind of attacks that you would get from intellectual property rights. Well, people that just wanted to abuse the system, basically. So around this time also, Noble 8 was championed by two engineers at Apple. I'd maintained it on SourceForge and I'd had continuous development. I think I had another developer by this stage, but he was primarily working on Windows. At the time, and really this was the legacy of the development, I made sure that it ran on every possible compiler I could get my hands onto. So whether I was using a Microsoft compiler or an open source compiler or a variety of the flavors of Apple compilers at the time, I always made sure that it compiled with ifdefs-related stuff, and this really captivated the two Apple engineers. They were very interested in modeling various kinds of code optimization associated with real-time graphics and processor metrics. So they created the 8 brain cycles per second as a means of calculating how you could do various kinds of optimizations. They displayed Noble 8 at Apple's WWDC 2003 and then distributed it with their Chud tools. I think it's only within the past 6 months been pulled from Apple's site associated with the documentation from that. Through this period as well, I started thinking about what I wanted to do with the license. And there, I think there were about 3 or 4 BSD licenses at the time. And I kind of hand-picked elements of the BSD license or BSD licenses with the view that if I created a diverse license, or that basically it was down to open source developers to create diverse licenses if they wanted the various aspects of the licenses to be absorbed. I published, this is the first publication on Noble 8 that I did formally in IEEE Computer Graphics and Applications on the graphics and some of the legacy issues, and I also talked on BBC Radio 4 in 2004. In 2005, and the connection with Apple had been they'd made various contributions, but then there was a kind of quiet period in 2005. It was so quiet that I thought they were actually dropping the development through that period of time. However, I was also in the process of moving back to the US, and I found, I think either through a Google search or some way, I think I was actually contacted by a developer who had been at WWDC, and he said he wanted some support associated with the Intel port. And I wasn't aware that Apple had actually done an Intel port of Noble 8 at that stage. So it was kind of curious to have an open source project that they were distributing as well, that I was distributing, that somehow the communication had been lost. And through, again, I think a Google search, I got in contact with Ernie Probekar, who at the time was Apple's open source manager. And he basically championed the use of Noble 8 through Apple. So there are a number of Apple engineers who are still at Apple, a number of engineers who have left Apple, who continue to use Noble 8 for various things. And the Intel fork was picked up, actually, by a group of Intel engineers. So through this period of time as well, thinking about licenses, the thing that really interested me was actually being able to track when a company was using Noble 8 and some formalization associated with that. And through some of my dealings in the UK, I came across a company called Ravenbrook. They did a memory management package. And they had a particular open source license that required, in the case of commercial use, separate licensing. In my version of it, it just required that they contact me via email. And this I maintained with the Noble 8 simulation, primarily just so I could gauge its use in industry. In 2008, I appeared on an internet radio show called Floss Weekly, and one of the listeners to the show, had about 30,000 listeners, flagged the Ravenbrook license. He was a fellow in Queensland, Australia, and he said, oh, I'd really like to show Noble 8 at my Linux user group. However, I don't think this Ravenbrook license is a legitimate open source license. And he then flagged it to the OSI board, and I had some correspondence with the OSI board. Fortunately, Ernie Probekar was also a former member of the board and was able to represent me. But basically, I had to change the license. At the time, although they've expanded the number of licenses, there were only a very small number of licenses that the OSI board recognised for open source. And I think historically, it kind of moved to a point and has now has since moved away. So from that, I moved to the MIT license, which is the license I've stuck with to this day. In 2009, I started formally publishing, academically publishing on Noble 8, and that basically I produced maybe 2 to 3 chapters a year on Noble 8 just as a means of producing additional intellectual property associated with the project, but maintaining, obviously, its open source roots. And in 2009, the project was slashdotted once again. 2010, we picked up a full-time developer, and it's one of these strange ethical issues that basically, due to the current economy, there are a lot of unemployed developers out there that are willing to contribute to open source projects. Thankfully, Bob lives in the UK, or maybe slightly more thankfully, but he's continued to develop up until this day. He's got various skill sets that will be applicable here, but he's not interested in leaving the UK. I also gave 2 public talks, one at SRI and one at Intel, and they were the first 2 public talks that I'd given in about a decade on Noble 8. I met Ernie Propaker. So then we move through to the present day. I use dual hosting for the project, but I think dual hosting is really critical because if one of them goes down, you need to probably have an independent way of getting the source. And previously, I used to use a wide variety of methods, including updated zip files or FTP to particular sites and things like that, because you always want to protect the continuity of the source code. So I now have 2 full-time developers, thanks again to the economy. Bob Buntram has continued on. Bob Buntram's actually contributed a vast quantity of source code. Most of the recent simulation additions have come from Bob. I do a lot of work as well, mainly finding bugs, but also unifying the source code. And we also have a woman on the East Coast who's now developing a threading model with the simulation. And about a month ago, we picked up an artist from The Simpsons, which was really cool. He's interested in learning how to program. I'm more than happy to teach him how to program with Noble 8, and it's always great to get graphics. Any questions?
So you mentioned you kind of your evolution about the license. Mm-hmm. If you would have to pick a license now, would it be Apache? Would you still go to MIT?
I picked MIT through frustration with the OSI board. I don't think there's a perfect license out there. And I think the argument that they made, which was a relatively strong one, was that it's my responsibility to create the relationships and the license isn't going to protect me. So through the legacy of this, I've always looked at the license as a means of protection from whatever I saw at the time. So as we went through the history, that was the nature of the license changes. And I think there's some merit in that. It's mainly to do with the relationships that you create rather than the license in these circumstances. But I don't think there's an ideal license out there. MIT is just the least of my concerns, basically. So early on in the development, there was a tech magazine that published an article in Australia about another project in the UK that appeared to be very similar, and I wrote about this in IEEE Graphics and Applications. And at the time, it was just impossible, basically, to do any kind of protection. So there was a kind of legacy emotion created from that, but also that I wanted to continue to maintain the source code. And if you think of the legacy history of the project, the use by Apple and Intel could only have come through the source code being available. Now, that wasn't a perfect relationship either. They didn't do anything really aside from use the project and display it, but they also generated a user base from that. I think it's basically just about maintaining ideas, and it gets more curious when you have full-time developers, because then you have a circumstance where you're really guiding them in a certain light, but they are actually creating their own developments as well. So then does it become a broader project? Do I start a non-profit in California? You know, these kind of options, you know, become more relevant as the project grows in size. But does that answer your question?
Well, I'm just wondering what was the last kindness?
So I've always thought of Noble 8 almost like a business card or something like that. It's something I've developed to show that I have this body of knowledge, but also, particularly with the academic publication, it gives me a very sharp critique against philosophers primarily, because I can actually say, if you simulate these aspects of what you're writing about here, these are the outcomes, and here's the data associated with that. So I think that's a very strong idea, and if there's always the challenge that if someone takes these aspects and produces something that's highly popular, potentially commercial, but dies, then your ideas that you've carried on but lose their relevancy, basically. So that's always been my concern, that there's some super, you know, it was summarized, I think, by a user review that said, this remains the best 8-brain simulation on Mac OS X, you know. So, I mean, you do think of this very much in a kind of minority, tiny perspective, but the reality is if some of the ideas are taken away, I found this with virtual reality, for example. So I came to virtual reality relatively late, but I had 3D algorithms for mapping landscapes, and not only the terminology, but the concept also died by people that were trying to, you know, do whatever they were trying to do, and it fell off accordingly. And I think that's some of the legacy history associated with Noble8 that maybe I'm trying to capture in my description here. Any other questions? Cool.
Thank you.